do we assume or hope that our rehabilitation processes have allowed that person to successfully be a part of society again?
Homer confronts some tough questions surrounding its annual holiday craft fair. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, November 22nd. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the perks of helping Southeast handle hazardous waste.
I haven't had to pay for anything for like the last 2 years, like household cleaning supplies, laundry soap, you name it.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Colder temperatures are here, and the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation reminds you of the danger of carbon monoxide, a poisonous gas that you can't see or smell. If it builds up in your home, it can be deadly. Be safe this winter and have a qualified mechanic ensure your heating system is working properly. Never run your car in the garage or operate a portable generator in an enclosed space. Finally, always ensure your home has a working carbon monoxide detector. This message sponsored by AHFC.
The legislature ended its fourth special session of the year yesterday without taking action on a bill that would tax income to help balance the state budget. But lawmakers acted on another matter. The Legislative Council voted to allow Senator David Wilson to view a video of a June incident that's heightened concerns about sexual harassment in the Capitol. The video won't be made public, and it's not clear whether Alaskans will ever know exactly what happened. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman describes what we do know about the incident.
A controversy that's bubbled up in recent weeks began in June. At the time, the House was debating the state budget. Members of the House majority were meeting in Dillingham Democratic Speaker Bryce Edgman's chambers when Wasilla Republican Senator David Wilson walked up to the closed door.
What I remember is he had his ear up against the door as if he was listening in.
That's James Brooks, a Juneau Empire reporter who recalls what happened next.
A staffer came up and said, "You can't do that. You need to get away."
Brooks says Wilson then moved his cell phone.
To get the cell phone closer to the door, he put it between the staffer's legs, and the staffer was wearing a skirt. Everyone in the vicinity who saw it was like, "Did that just happen? Did you see what I saw?" And it was very strange and very sudden and abrupt, and it didn't last more than a few seconds and really didn't know what to make of it.
Wilson remembers it differently.
That never occurred.
Wilson has declined to give a detailed account of the incident. He said before Tuesday's Legislative Council meeting that he wanted to view security camera footage of the incident before giving his account.
I just want to make sure that before I give my official statement of comment upon these matters, I just want to make sure that I can always tell the truth, 100% of the truth, as I don't try not to mislead folks. So I want to make sure that my statements can be as factual and as accurate as possible before I make statement upon that, because no way, shape, or form did I do what I was accused of in terms of any type of sexual harassment.
A second news reporter witnessed the incident. KTVA's Liz Raines wrote in a statement that the staff member was visibly shaken as Wilson refused to move away from the door after she repeatedly asked him to. Raines says Wilson then placed the phone between the female staffer's legs. Raines says she heard the staffer tell Wilson that the action was inappropriate. Raines says she told him that her photographer would film what he was doing. Wilson left. Raines says the staff member was visibly shaking. Wilson says Raines' account is inaccurate. The staff member did not file a report alleging harassment. The incident wasn't publicly reported until Anchorage resident Jeff Landfield discussed it in late October in one of the first posts of his political blog, The Alaska Landmine.
Wilson was interesting because, while this is, I think, a bigger problem in the Capitol and has been for a long time, his situation happened to just be in public in front of several people, reporters, and also on camera, caught on camera.
Revived interest in the incident led Anchorage Representative Gabrielle Ledoux to reconsider the legislature's policy on sexual harassment and other workplace harassment. Ledoux is a Republican member of the mostly Democratic House majority.
There have been rumors in this building about an incident which occurred, I think it was in June, involving David Wilson, Senator Wilson. You'll remember Senator Wilson, the same gentleman who slapped the reporter.
Ledoux was referring earlier this month to a May incident in which Anchorage Daily News reporter Nathaniel Herz said Wilson slapped him. Herz reported it to police. Wilson has said the interaction was playful. Ledoux said that the Senate could have taken formal action in response to the cell phone incident.
They haven't bothered to do anything when one of their own members apparently acted inappropriately.
Senate leaders also have supported revising the harassment policy, but haven't publicly commented on the June incident. Lanfield requested access to the security camera footage. His request was denied. The legislature's policy bars public access to security video. Wilson also requested access to the footage. The legislative council spent 5 hours in a meeting on Tuesday that was closed to the public, discussing Wilson's request and other matters. Wilson attended. The council voted to allow Wilson to view the video. It also voted to authorize an internal investigation by the legislature's human resources manager. Wilson immediately viewed the video, but declined on Tuesday to discuss what he saw. He said he would say more in the future and expressed hope that he would be absolved of allegations of inappropriate behavior. Lanfield says the policy to bar the public from viewing the video is wrong.
So, I mean, it's a total situation where the fox is guarding the hen house. They don't want embarrassing things to come out because Democrat or Republican doesn't matter. It makes them all look bad if something is recorded that's really, really bad in the Capitol. That's a public building. It's our building. It's not their building.
It's not clear whether there will be a public report on the incident. Council members emphasized Tuesday that they wouldn't comment on personnel matters. Juneau Democratic Representative Sam Keto III chairs the council. Keto announced a new subcommittee to examine the harassment policy and report back to the council by early in the next legislative session, which begins in January. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Towns across Alaska have to grapple with what to do once a known sex offender returns to the community after serving their punishment. Though there are clear limits in some areas, there are massive gray zones as well. As KBBI's Aaron Bolton reports, residents in Homer are struggling to balance fairness with safety ahead of one of the Kenai Peninsula's biggest celebrations, an annual holiday craft fair.
As the Homer Council on the Arts, which puts on the event, was sifting through the applications earlier this fall, they noticed one from a convicted sex offender. Eric Larson, a Homer man that was convicted of sexually abusing two teenage girls while he was a teacher in 2006, was applying to sell pottery. This raised concerns for some on the council, posing the question of whether or not Larson should be allowed to participate in the popular community event. Abigail Kokai is an artist hoping to make a little extra cash by selling some of her stuffed whales made of repurposed materials. Kokai didn't say whether or not she had a problem with Larson selling his work, but she thinks the choice comes down to faith in our current criminal justice system.
I mean, are they going to be punished for the rest of their life and never be able to live as a functioning human being as a result of something that has happened? Or do we assume or hope that our rehabilitation processes have allowed that person to successfully be a part of society again?
Larson didn't want to comment for the story because he fears people in the community may lash out at his family. He said only that he wants to be treated like everyone else and have the same opportunity as other artists. The incident is prompting local nonprofits to look for solutions that are as much about policy as politics. The Nutcracker Fair is held in the Homer High School, so at first, the council looked to the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District for guidance. But the district says its policy on registered sex offenders doesn't apply here. According to district spokesperson Peggy Erkineff, that's because the policy only restricts offenders from being on school property during the school day or during school-sponsored events.
In this case, an outside entity rented the Homer High School building for their event. And so when they're leasing or renting our space, there's no restrictions from a district perspective.
Since the Arts Council is just a tenant in the school building, it's their own policy that guides rules. But the organization realized it didn't have clear guidance on the matter. That left Executive Director Peggy Paver and her board with a lot of questions about what the small nonprofit should do.
We did consult with legal, judicial, and nonprofit sources in order to get opinions because this was an area that we hadn't really dealt with before.
The council offered a compromise to allow Larson to sell his pottery as long as someone else worked the booth. Larson told the council he would think about it, but never responded with a decision. Larson also proposed having someone on hand to supervise him, but the council says it won't have any staff or volunteers to spare. Ultimately, the nonprofit had no policy or legal grounds to deny Larson a spot at the fair. That paper says left the council with a choice. Is it appropriate for Larson to participate or not?
It doesn't escape us that this event is an event where minors are often off on their own.
The council also had to weigh Larson's personal rights. It's been more than 10 years since his conviction. He's served his sentence in prison and completed parole. Paver and the council also worry they could be open to charges of discrimination if they reject Larson without a policy in place. And the situation has caught the attention of other nonprofits, who are now asking themselves what they would do in the same situation. Catriona Reynolds is the executive director of Kachemak Bay Family Planning in Homer.
What considerations do we have? What protections need to be in place for our staff, for the people we serve, for the community, and what's appropriate?
Both Family Planning and the Arts Council plan to revisit their policies and possibly craft new ones to handle this particular situation and others like it. Paver didn't directly say which way her organization would lean on the issue. She says the board will likely address it in the spring, and at least for this year, the council will allow Larson to sell his work in person. Reporting in Homer, I'm Aaron Bolton.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Alaska State Parks offer a Black Friday deal.
We're certainly encouraging people to use the hashtag #OptOutside. And as part of that, we are waiving all of our parking fees.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, taking pride in its strong ties to Alaska's communities and in the 40 years of Alaska operations. Older Persons Action Group publishes Senior Voice, Alaska's only statewide publication for seniors, and is an excellent source of information for families and caregivers. SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG. Thanks for listening today. We love being a part of your media mix. Tune in every day to catch the best in statewide news and programming.
Alaska State Troopers say a skier died in an avalanche this afternoon in Hatcher Pass, north of Palmer. The man's death is the first avalanche fatality in Alaska for this winter. Trooper spokesman Tim Despain says the man was part of a group of three skiing in the pass north of Archangel Road when a layer of snow broke loose and slid down the mountain.
Two of the skiers were able to make it clear of the avalanche, and one skier was caught up in the avalanche.
Despain says all three were wearing locator beacons, and the two who were not buried found their friend and dug him out.
It was reported that they initiated CPR but were unsuccessful, and that the one skier was confirmed deceased.
Troopers, EMTs, and part State Parks personnel responded, as did a wildlife trooper helicopter, but the chopper was unable to land near the man's body. Troopers had not released the man's name as of 5 p.m. because his family had not yet been notified. Despain says responders had to hike to the body to recover it. The Hatcher Pass Avalanche Center categorized the avalanche danger as considerable on Monday, the last day the center issued a report. Considerable is the third highest level of danger out of five. The municipality of Anchorage will see a slightly bigger budget in the upcoming year. At its Tuesday night meeting, assembly members approved a $521 million operating budget. As Alaska Public Media's Zechariah Hughes reports, amid declining revenues, the city is struggling to close a spending gap while dealing with increasing costs to handle public safety and homelessness.
The new budget is about $12 million over last year's and taxes to the maximum allowable limit under the city's charter. The Assembly spent a long stretch of time debating amendments. More than $100,000 was added back into the budget to reverse cuts to the city's main library. Another $170,000 was put in to handle cleaning up homeless camps along the trail system. Felix Rivera, who represents communities in Midtown, says the overall expenditures reflect the city's priorities and values.
We all know that the city has skin in the game to solve this problem. Let's show it in the budget that we passed today.
Much of the budget increase concerns a constellation of costs associated with homelessness, crime, substance abuse, police, and emergency medical services. The administration asked the Assembly to approve millions of additional dollars for expanded police and fire departments, which includes ambulance transports. The mayor's office also requested $500,000 for more snow plowing after facing criticism last year. Assembly members approved those measures and added $50,000 to pay for a mobile syringe exchange program run by a local nonprofit that helps mitigate the spread of bloodborne diseases among injection drug users. Assemblymember John Weddleton of South Anchorage says it's an unfortunate expenditure as the city struggles to cope with the effects of worsening opioid and heroin addiction.
I think it's a tragedy that we have to honestly consider doing this, but I'm convinced that we have to buy needles for people.
Some of the new costs are covered by a 10% tax on fuel the Assembly approved earlier this month, which will offset property taxes slightly for homeowners. The administration has also left several staff positions unfilled to reduce personnel costs. The municipality's two most fiscally conservative members from Eagle River were the lone voice against the budget on the 11-member body. Fred Dyson objected to Assembly members voting to use money from savings to pay for extra services. Amy Domboski proposed unsuccessful amendments to make broad cuts to nearly all city departments and another to delete $500,000 the mayor's administration wants to use for its homelessness initiative.
So I'm not going to be supporting all these touchy-feely, we need to give more to this group and that group. The fact of the matter is we have to get our priorities in line. It's public safety, it's infrastructure, it's the basics. There comes a point where property taxpayers have had enough. And frankly, I've had enough.
The city has faced declining income in recent years from a drop in state revenue sharing and the end of a rebate from a local electrical utility. Costs have also increased from labor and the administration's push to expand the police and fire departments. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
The Bristol Bay Red King crab season finished up last week when the entire allowable catch was harvested. Miranda Westfall is the area management biologist for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Dutch Harbor.
The Bristol Bay Red King crab fishery went fairly well, a little slower than we would have liked to have seen, but they wrapped up with a total catch of 6.59 million pounds. So they caught all of the tack that was available for this season.
Before the season opened on October 15th, ADF&G and the National Marine Fisheries Service completed an analysis of the 2017 NIMS trawl survey results for Bristol Bay Red King crab. Westfall says that reports from the fishermen were in line with the survey.
From what we saw during the fishery, it was that the fishermen were seeing about what we expected from the survey, with a little bit slower fishing and pockets of crab without a real widespread distribution for the stock. So it was about as we expected.
Bering Sea Tanner and Snow Crab fisheries are still underway.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by
Wells Fargo, with over 13,000 ATMs and more than 6,000 branches coast to coast. For a branch location near you, visit wellsfargo.com. Alaska Humanities Forum grants support creative projects that share the stories of Alaska and explore what it means to be Alaskan. Get details and apply at akhf.org. This message sponsored by Alaska Humanities Forum.
Alaska's top marijuana regulator says a committee will look at issues regarding the testing of cannabis products amid inconsistency in potency results from different labs. Brian Coyle with Steep Hill, Alaska, says 16 samples were tested at his lab and the state's other facility, Canatest. He says THC results for products tested at Canatest were higher, sometimes significantly. Coyle says customers want a high THC level, as do retailers and cultivators, since it lets them sell their products for a premium. Jonathan Rupp, Cannatest's scientific director, says he has questions about how Steep Hill conducted its tests, but also wants to figure out why the results are so different. When a household cleaner or a box of batteries is barged to one of Alaska's remote communities and sold in a store, it's commerce. But many of those items aren't destined for a one-way transaction. A lot of hazardous waste shouldn't be tossed in a landfill. Radioactive smoke detectors, flares that can explode, chemicals that can poison you. So, at great expense, small municipalities are stuck trying to fix the problem. How do you get the potentially dangerous trash back out of town? Elizabeth Jenkins reports as part of the Coast Alaska series, Talking Trash.
This is where we put all the waste into containers when we're offloading cars.
Aaron Whitmire is leading me around a bulky Sony TV, a spray can of Raid, and grease from a high-end restaurant. We're at Juneau's hazardous waste facility, where people drop off their stuff that shouldn't go in the landfill. Whitmire works for a company that contracts with the city and borough of Juneau. He makes sure the trash is safely packaged, so it can be shipped out. And he says the job comes with a few perks.
The amount of free stuff that I get. I haven't had to pay for anything for like the last 2 years. Like household cleaning supplies, laundry soap, you name it.
It's not just Whitmire who picks up the swag. Anyone in Juneau can stop by and look for a half-used bottle of their favorite cleaner or bug spray. But what isn't scavenged has to go somewhere else. That's because Alaska doesn't have any permitted hazardous waste treatment or disposal plants. So regulated hazardous waste has to be shipped back down to the lower 48. And around the corner from Whitmire, in a city office occupied by one man, is where the negotiations for that happen.
This is my abode.
Jim Panor is Juneau's solid waste coordinator, and he knows this business inside and out. He got his start in Washington State.
I grew up as a landfill kid rat.
Panor has been in Juneau for close to a decade, trying to make the math of shipping the city's hazardous waste pencil out. If you ask him, it doesn't. But during his time, he's been able to make it more affordable. He saved the city around $120,000 a year just by figuring out a way to treat latex paint so it can safely go in the landfill. And the capital city is one of only two communities in Southeast with a weekly drop-off site.
So we have time to work the waste stream. Before, at a one-time event per month, you don't have time to work the waste stream.
Literally a stream. It's a term used to describe the life flow of garbage from beginning to end. Still, there's some trash that's so risky to transport, the cost makes it nearly impossible to barge. Old smoke detectors and exit signs are radioactive, so Juneau has to shell out extra to ship those. Then there are out-of-date boat flares, which are considered highly flammable. Right now, there's no way to get those out of town. Panor says this creates a giant paradox. Commercial products wind up on store shelves with relative ease. But once it becomes hazardous waste, it's a lot harder to transport out.
I mean, even Juneau here, we're the capital city and we're 32,000 people. We're the biggest city in Southeast. We struggle with it.
In rural parts of the state, the struggle is even worse and the stakes can be much higher. The state's Department of Environmental Conservation used to have a program that helped barge out hazardous waste, but it was cut in 2004. And since then, it's been up to the communities to figure out their own method. Sandra Woods, who inspects landfills for the state, says a lot of small municipalities are just trying to do their best, but the funds are limited and money is usually needed for other things, like clean drinking water.
By the time you get to solid waste, the money's usually gone.
There is a federal program that helps Alaskan Native villages barge out hazardous waste, but it's being discontinued in about 3 years. Lynn Zinder, an Anchorage doctor who specializes in solid waste management, calls it an impending catastrophe.
It's very worrisome from a public health perspective.
Zinder helps run an environmental nonprofit, and she's a member of the Solid Waste Alaska Task Force, a group that's trying to help villages prepare for the change. She says she's concerned. As more hazardous waste goes into the ground, it could leach into the environment and contaminate subsistence foods.
Those landfills will expand out to rivers. they can expand out to town. The access can be so horrendous that people start just keeping their garbage in town.
Jim Panor, Juneau Solid Waste Coordinator, thinks the state needs to step up and help more communities get rid of their hazardous waste. He acknowledges it's an unlikely scenario, given the state's current budget deficit. But he envisions a fund that could earn interest, designed specifically for trash. In the meantime, he says consumers should view the half-empty bottle of nail polish or antifreeze differently. There's a branding issue.
I don't like that term, hazardous waste, because you went to the store and purchased it.
Panor says he's never used a jug of Drano to unclog his sink. He knows even after it's tossed, someone's going to pay for it. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau.
More than a dozen state park systems across the country have caught on to the opt-outside movement. They're waiving fees or offering guided hikes and other enticements to bring people outdoors on Black Friday. Alaska Public Media's Emily Russell reports from Chugach State Park.
Walking through mostly birch forest. It snowed a couple days ago, so there's some fresh snow on the ground and on the trees.
It's wild, it's wintry, and for Black Friday, the $5 parking fee in Chugach State Park is waived. In 2015, the outdoor gear company REI shut its doors for the day on Black Friday and unveiled the Opt Outside campaign. Carrie Harris stopped into the REI here in Anchorage the day before Thanksgiving.
Right now, I am shopping for a hat for myself.
Harris says she's glad REI is closed on Black Friday. After a late breakfast that she says will probably include some turkey, Harris and her family plan to steer clear of the shops on Friday.
Well, my in-laws are in town, and with our three little boys, we're going to get out and do some sledding and try to stay away from downtown, all of civilization here in Anchorage, and just spend time together as a family outside.
And they can do that in any state park in Alaska for free on Friday. Ethan Tyler is the director of State Parks and Recreation.
We're certainly encouraging people to use the hashtag #OptOutside. And as part of that, we are waiving all of our parking fees.
And others are doing the same, from Mount Ascutney State Park in Vermont to Mount Rainier National Park in Washington. If you opt outside, you might miss out on some bargains at the store, but the payoff can be huge.
Just walked around this corner and I'm now in this big bowl surrounded by mountains on three sides. And right now I see two moose and they've stopped moving right now. I think they see me, or at least they hear me. Really just spectacular. All right. Reporting from the Chugach Mountains above Anchorage, I'm Emily Russell.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman and Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau, Aaron Bolton in Homer, Casey Grove, Zachariah Hughes and Emily Russell in Anchorage, and Avery Lill in Dillingham. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
ExxonMobil Alaska. Their financial investment and partnership with local companies at Point Thompson helps contribute to Alaska's economy and jobs for Alaskans. ExxonMobil, energy lives here. If you're a single person who makes less than $60,240 per year, you're eligible for federal tax credits to help pay health insurance premium costs. If you need health insurance for 2018, there's a limited window to act. Open enrollment for 2018 plans is from November 1st through December 15th of 2017. If you don't have coverage, it could be financially devastating. Sign up at healthcare.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Division of Insurance. The Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education offers the Family Education Loan so parents, a spouse, or grandparents can help students with the cost of college or training programs in or outside of Alaska. Interest rates are lower than the Federal Plus, and no credit is required. For more information, call 800-441-2962 or visit acpe.alaska.gov/radio. This message sponsored by the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.